traditional data we already take. And also I talk about why people try to extend the current definition of ZRC operator to the nonlinear section. Why people do that? Which is the first is proposed by Tanaka and Yokawa. Okay, so this is it, and let's go to the first one. This is Dr. Lake, and it shows Oliver's. Very homogeneous and isotropic, almost a spatial plate on the large scales. So we can describe by this background connection, we call the Friedrich-Robertson-Walker geometry. A is scale vector, a dependent function, different type of universe. We have a different type dependent function. But we usually do not measure the scale vector directly. We measure something which is formed from a scale vector such as Hubble parameter or dissolution parameter such as that. And also, even the large scales, seems very homogeneous and isotropic, but they still have small fluctuations. So that's why I put the fluctuations here. And actually, from this spectrum, we call the post-inflation power spectrum. You can see this oscillation. The oscillation is basically due to the two competing effects between the photon ratio and the barrier, because the barrier give you the gravitational attraction and put things together. The photon ratio actually try to make things push things out. So in this one, you see this post-inflational pulse spectrum. But this post-inflational pulse spectrum, you can infer primordial pulse spectrum, and this is one of the most exciting things recently in cosmology, because we observe this value. This is the scalar part of the primordial pulse spectrum. It's about 10 to minus 9, okay? So almost a constant. It's not this one, it's almost a constant. But also, we know the upbound for the tensor to scalar ratio. So we can infer from this upper bound of tensor to scalar ratio and the measurement of scalar primordial pulse spectrum. We infer the upper bound for this tensor part of primordial pulse spectrum. So this is very exciting, and this is the main thing I want to talk about. Here, it's because if we compare this data, the data we just mentioned here, we want this actually basically agreement. And the tree of the result from this definition, this is the current definition of zeta correlator or HH correlator. It is Fourier transform for the wave of two fields product compute at a different spatial point. So at the tree of the result, the data actually basically agree with this definition, only at the tree of the result. When people also start to wonder how big the correlation to the primordial pulse spectrum might be. So then this bring the problem, how do we deal with the infrared divergent loops in the Friedrich-Robertson-Walker geometry? Because for example, if you have a loop correlation like this one, logarithm, some characteristic length, times the Hubble parameter scale factor. Then some people might argue, okay, I can just make a divided couple very big. Then, okay, people argue that I will get a big correction, loop correction to the primordial pulse spectrum. This is very capable, and this is why Tanaka and Yokawa try to make a try to argue about it, and it's because so far we do not have a physical principle to fix this characteristic place, because right now all the loop correction will depend on the infrared cutoff. Okay, and this is not a physical thing we know for the Friedrich-Robertson-Walker geometry. Then the Tanaka, and also this Yokawa, they propose the idea is they make a nonlinear extension of a current definition of zeta scalar operator, and they try to get rid of infrared divergence without the infrared cutoff. When they try to do this and make this kind of nonlinear extension, actually they indeed succeeded to get rid of infrared divergence without infrared cutoff at one loop order. but you actually have some potential, cause some potential danger, and we need to take special care. And this is the thing I want to talk about. The whole talk is about this. And also they can make this non-linear extension of current emission of zeta zeta cortex, because the new correction to the Schroeder result, I mean, it's zeta zeta and HH, actually the same order as the one from the non-linear extension. And this is why they have this kind of idea. And the final, I will talk about might be some data fix to this non-linear proposal. But the real thing is, what is the operator corresponding to what we really measure? The thing we talked about the previous slide, because this is agree with this current definition. And show the result, and people try to make extension of it because so far we cannot measure the correlations yet. So this is why people try to figure out what is really operator corresponding to what we really measure. Okay. So I know many people are experts in this. I just make a quick review on the single scalar inflation and briefly. Roughly sketch how we derive the trio, the zeta zeta operator, and the tensor part of the pulse spectra. So this is a single scalar inflation. We have this Einstein field returns. We have this Mises Niemann combo scalars and this potential. We call this field as the Pitwell time. Okay, and because the background geometry is not the exact zeta, so we introduce this slow-roll parameters is fairly range from 0 to 1. The initial slow-roll parameter is minus both time derivative of h, minus h squared. And also, because the most contribution to the primordial pulse spectrum comes from the most past the Foster horizon closing. Foster horizon closing is, what is Foster horizon closing? Is the physical momentum equal to a Hubble parameter. At that time, we enforced the horizon closing. But here, we also introduced the convention of Monsena and Weber. They are the other way to do it, but this is their way to do this, to derive the Schroeder zeta operator. They actually used the ADM decomposition. I could not write down the G00 and the G0I part. I didn't write down this IJ part, I mean, the station H part. And they compose this one to the A squared, it's the nature to zeta, g tilde ij, g tilde ij can be written as this is the nature of ij. They expand out, etc. Blah, blah, blah. And this zeta is a scalar part of H, and this part, hij, is the tensor part we talk about. Here.
So the determinant of g tilde I is 1, right? The g tilde is the term that is unit.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't say it, but that's true that the full thing that you add everything up is the terminant is fine.
The terminant
of g tilde.
Terminal.
The determinant. Because I mean, my point is that you can always bring a factor out of g tilde and put it in zeta. Right? There is a degenerate split between zeta and g tilde.
You mean you want to use a different
coefficient
and you define the zeta and the h?
Yeah, isn't that true? I can always add something to zeta and then divide that g tilde by g tilde, the exponential of g.
I don't know if you can do this way. I know other people, for example, you can use a different kind of decomposition. For example, like
that's a requirement that HP transverse inheritance.
I just wanted to make that clear. That
yes.
Yeah.
This is because this is the scalar part, and this is the transverse part. After you equals the gauge, this gauge is a transverse, so you want to make the whole thing. So that is one. You will make the whole thing from the transverse and transverse. But the page I will talk about later. But I think people use a different decomposition of spatial matching. But finally, they still need to, I mean, fall into the gauge, the current condition, because this is the thing I will talk about here. Okay. And so I just write down again, this is a condition, and this is a scalar power spectrum, tensor power spectrum. Then you just free transform this wave for the wave of the two fields products at a different spatial point. And this is a scalar power, and the equivalency for tensor power here. And because you want to compute this, you have to eliminate the extra physical degree, the freedom. So they actually impose the gauge. The gauge they use is this one, they just make the four equivalent field equal to background equivalent field. It also impose the transverse condition. The previous slide, just like you mentioned here, because I stretch out the scale part, so this one is the transverse. But they also impose this transverse gauge. So the thing is, I want to make this part is transverse and transverse. Yeah, so this is the part of our spectrum. Okay, and even though Weber and Montesela they use the ADM decomposition, but actually they do not specify loss and the shift. To fix the gauge, instead they solve the constraint equation, and then we express the constraint equation in terms of matching. Then substitute the fake into the original Lagrangian. And this is a very complicated thing, but you connect the same term, a similar term together, you will get a quadratic term and a higher vertex equation, etc. Let us first let's look at the quadratic part in zeta and h. The big difference for this one and this one is you see there's epsilon here, the remember epsilon is very small. So if you are function reverse this quadratic part, you will get 1 over epsilon, and this is the enhancement. This is the best behavior of the Morph function or propagator, because you usually do this function reverse of the quadratic term of a differential operator. And here I just write up the definition for p equal to 4, then this is the scalar part of the Morph function square. This is the Morph function square. Okay, so actually we cannot solve this Morph function exactly for the general epsilon of t. You can solve it numerically, but if there is no analytical solution for that, just for simplicity, and set the SO2 constant, and then they will have analytical solution. And this is a scalar Morph function, tensor part of the Morph function. Then you just substitute there into this condition, you got this term and the tensor part. So just what we expect in the quadratic Lagrangian, you see there is one over epsilon enhancement in the scalar part. Because this is the enhancement, and this is why we observe the scalar primordial power spectrum, but we have not observed the tensor part. It's the reason for that. And you also can get a ratio, tensor to scalar ratio, it's about 16 epsilon. So let's compare the recent data release from the South Pole telescope with 95% confidence. And because we know the upper bound of a tensor to scalar ratio, so we can infer the upper bound for this epsilon. It's 0.007, and one epsilon enhancement is about 145. So from this value, from the data, we know the, even though it's not exact d theta, but actually very close to d theta, because for the second case, the epsilon parameter equal to zero, and also, this duration, if anything, have this one epsilon in it, and then you will see this enhancement. For example, it's the zeta operator we already observed. The GH square basically is the like GH square of over epsilon. And also, from the the scalar harmonic spectrum and the outer bound of the scalar ratio, we can infer how big of a huge square. Okay, so this is also about the upper bound of this is about the 10 to the minus 10. Huge square is sort of like the loop counting parameters in the general relativity, in the quantum relativity. So this means even the unit harmonic inflation, this is a very high energy scale, is about 10 to 14 GeV, but the loop counting parameter is very small, even in such a high energy scale, so only 10 to minus 10. So this means we can deal with quantum relativity derivative. And also, because we have this one or epsilon transport, and if loop ratio is time dependent, you might not give total usage information. It's not negligible.
And this is just briefly mentioned the trial result.
And also, just as I said, except the quadratic term, you also have higher order vertex detection. And this is very complicated if you really try to work out by yourself. So it's worked out by several different persons in Montana, the qubit Zeta, and this Siri, say, and Stolz. They worked out the 14 Zeta. However, it's also if you try to argue this Zeta and 6 Zeta, how is the theory of that? And the Brandberger and his collaborator worked out the Zeta H. If you just focus on the epsilon pattern, and you remember in the previous slide, show only the zeta in this field, okay, will carry epsilon, but the H part, the transverse transverse part doesn't carry epsilon. So you can just look at this. This is 3 zeta, 4 zeta carry 2 epsilon, 5 zeta, 6 zeta carry 3 powers of epsilon. And here only focus on the zeta. This is the 1 zeta and the 2 zeta carry 1 epsilon. So from this pattern, you actually can reduce to a higher order. Basically, it's like 2n powers or 2n minus 1 powers of zeta actually carry by, actually will carry 2n powers of epsilon. But this epsilon is small, so all the vertex interactions occurs by this epsilon, powers of the epsilon. And when you consider the correction, except the propagator, you also will include the vertex detection. Okay, for example, if you consider this loop correction, you will see this 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 propagator is correlated to call the external legs. On this, okay, so I think this is one propagator, 1, 2, 3. So this is the basic propagator, it's like a huge square over epsilon. So the 1, 2, 3, three propagators. Okay, and this is 40th vertex, 40 vertex in epsilon square. Here just to make dimensions. So if I write down the whole result, it's expressed in terms of a classical result. This is the
classical
result.
Okay, so about these powers of epsilon, so in the Malvasena action, if you just write it out without any integrating by parts, it naively looks like it's of order epsilon, and it's only after a bunch of integration by parts and things that it becomes of order epsilon squared. I thought it was supposed to be the case that the expansion in zeta is also an expansion in epsilon, so that the fourth order action, if you did enough integrating by parts, you could get it proportional to epsilon. But that's the
you really want to ask this by yourself? Or
no, I haven't done it. It's just the
you say, for example, if this 40 term, but sorry, is this qubit term, if you do some integration by parts, and you might fall into the category like the 40 zeta? Or the other
last time that I said that if you do some integration by parts for that zeta 4, then you get epsilon cubed into the epsilon squared. That's what I think,
yeah. Secretly, it's order epsilon cubed.
so sure you can do it. And, why it's a different, this is very complicated, the expansion, but I think a part of turn you might get rid of the weight, like what you described, for example, that gives up a lot of population, partial integration, but there's still some term left. So then the final term will behave like this one. I think what you said is like, for example, if original population, you just expand out without any further manipulation, then you just not have this epsilon decouple. You might have an epsilon or other powers, for example, epsilon decouple or something like that, or a power like a cubic epsilon decouple, and then you can do something. But you do a lot of reduction. The final is still will let something like this. It's quite like that. Yeah, this is a sort of a complicated if you try to work it out.
So how do you know when you're done? How do you know there's not some more complicated integration by parts you haven't thought of that can bring it to epsilon with you?
Well, this is a paper I read, I think I believe in connection. Yeah, but I think what you mentioned is the possible is not just the one simple term that you do something other for the reduction. But I think the value is still left this behavior. Just take the operations and if this three are complicated and one vertex, quoting vertex. Then I write it down as the trailer result. It's a trailer result. And then this loop from the loop is a one loop. So you will see for loop operations, actually there's no epsilon, one epsilon test. And this to me makes sense because we only observe the trailer, the scalar oscillator. And also for the austerity, for example, if you compute this one, two, three. The three external legs, the three commutators, and this is the qubit interaction. Qubit interaction also has a behavior like this. So actually it's the same. You write down in terms of shorter result, and this is the loop operation. So the same for this non-partiality terms, you also do not have one epsilon investment. And this thing makes sense so far for the current definition of the quantum theory. Okay. And why people want to, before I proceed to the Kanaka your account also, I want to make a distinction between this IR divergence and the secular growth. There is the Fourier logarithm. And the Fourier divergence comes from the field, the real-time field configuration, close to constant in space and time. And this Fourier logarithm actually comes from the mold. Continually reshift from UV to IR. So this invariant, if the field is exactly constant in space and time, then the T is a pure gauge. So this is why Tanaka and Yokawa, the case, this invariant divergence might be pure gauge, but the invariant logarithm is not, because there's some time dependence. Okay, and also, and also because they wonder, I mean the Tanaka and Yokawa, because in this spatial gauge appears in very divergence. So it seems to them it's a bad spatial coordinate choice. And also this invariant divergence might be pure gauge. So if they can make this operator spatially invariant, then this is a way to get rid of invariant divergence without invariant cutoff. And this is the first reason to make a non-linear state, and I will talk about this later. And also, zeta, this operator itself, is not an invariant operator. So, of course, the variable zeta operator must be gauge dependent. Also, the thing that is the invariant logarithm. Before that, because this include the main terms, the constant part, and also some space time dependent part. Okay, for the constant part, researchers is divided divergence. Okay, and people guess this divided divergence by the POH. But even though the constant part of this pH fixed Green's function is pH dependent, but it doesn't necessarily mean rest of this pH fixed Green's function must be pH dependent. For example, the other part is they have very logarithm. Okay, in the leading term of this logarithm might be pH dependent because we already see the coefficient of a leading power logarithm exactly the same, the coefficient is exactly the same in three different gauges. And we know the spin 2 part is a dynamical graph, its transverse stress part cannot be changed by altering the gauge. So this is the one thing I want to mention here. So the first reason they try to make an extension is because they guess the which is the bent spatial coordinates and the infrared low infrared dimensions might be pure gauge. So if they choose the good spatial coordinates, so they can get rid of infrared dimensions without infrared cutoff. And the second reason they try to make operators spatially different. But before I talk about their proposal, I also want to point out something. You just only make a operator in red, it's not enough to guarantee to give you the physical observable. For example, if you encounter some pH dependent quantities, I will say it's not just a garbage which you just throw it away. The typical example is, for example, the phase-based time, this is a pH independent S matrix. This gauge independent piece actually is formed from each gauge dependent Green's function. So zeta, zeta correlated, this zeta might be playing the same kind of role. Because right now we know the zeta, zeta correlated is gauge dependent, but it might also contain some physical information as this gauge fixed Green's function. Just so far, we do not know the way to form something like a phase-based time S matrix. This is the gauge dependent quantity. So I would say if you encounter some gauge dependent quantity, you should not just say, hey, this is garbage, we should just ignore it at all. The second, even you make a operator invariant, it's not enough. For example, one, this is constant, it keeps the same under any kind of gauge transformation. Of course, you can say this is pH invariant operator, just one example. But it tells us nothing about physical, any physical observable. So what I mean is there are many pH invariant operators, but only some of them corresponding to what we really measure. So the thing is, what we really measure? PH invariant operator is not enough, you need to do the further check. The third thing is, even for the some non-invariant operator, you can enforce this non-invariant operator to become an invariant operator through some gauge fixing. However, different gauge fixing give you a different invariant operator. So this also could not guarantee to give you something physical. Then I can give you one example. For example, if you consider the EM.
Yeah, constant.
For example, you know this is a gauge, this is not a gauge invariant operator. Okay, so right now I try to write up the different form, then I impose, for example, blue gauge. Then I can do something like this is place like 1 over this as well, like a Green's function, so you can write up. Thank you.
just minus zero. This is the transformation part. Here just minus zero. This is the Coulomb gauge. And this term actually is the field stress. So this operator through this Coulomb gauge will enforce it to become something like. Gets a one invariant operator. So the back of this invariant operator give, in any case, you will give a, for example, I say, maybe one. Okay? But then you also can enforce this non-invariant operator through a different gauge, then you get a different invariant operator. For example, if you do the gauge fixing through to.
You may want to write there, I mean, if people can answer it, I mean, you can use those words. I mean that
yeah. This is the Coulomb gauge. So zeta itself is not the gauge invariant operator, but you can through the different gauge fix, you form a different invariant operator. The different operator, the value of different invariant operator give the different value. Even though, for example, if you compute this one, I say this operator I call 1, then you compute this with any gauge, I say I give a value 1. In any case, you get the same value. Here, also the same, if I call this. But then, it's through a different edge fixing, it's red up, it's a form different in red operator. So it's still not guaranteed. Of course, you can do that, but we don't know if this is really corresponding to the data arrangement. So this is what I mentioned before, consider the Nakayu Kawa proposal, because they try to make the operator spatially invariant. And they do not make a time invariant. And the other potential danger is, if you have, you try to make operator invariant in general relativity, and all of this gauge event operator in general relativity is a local operator. You can see this just from the general coordinate transformation. It's the same time dependence. And the one potential danger is if you have this kind of non-local fields, you already can define a field. Then sometimes you can make the interactive quantum fields this country field, and then you numb the physical effects. You might change some physics. Just one example, if you have a scalar field, you can just take the functional derivative, then you get a equation motion. This is a differential operator, dynamical field, this is interaction terms. Then I can write down this solution in the Young field form. Okay. So you just import the D minus, inverse D in both sides, then you get this one. Phi naught
is the background field is the homogeneous solution. Okay, of course you can write down this four field in terms of background field. Here just iterate more to use this relation, then you will get the four field in terms of background field. Then if you try to solve this in a reverse way, then you can get the background field as a function of four field. Then at this stage, the interacting fields become the free fields. You can see just acting the differential operator on both sides. The d v naught, the right hand side, d v equal to inflection term. This is also inflection term, so you get a zero on the other side. So at this stage, the field become free fields. After you do this field elimination. The dangerous thing is sometimes you will just relate to entirely different theory together. For example, general relativity, EM is free fields, so you do not need to do anything. But for the GR, for example, you have some source term on the other side, and I can always do this, just follow the same procedure. You do this non-local field recognition, then you make this GR looks like a free field. Then in each free field extension, you can just relate the annihilation creation operator. Then you say, okay, try to argue this GR equal to electromagnetic. So this is nonsense because we will be no general relativity, it's not electromagnetic. This is a theory we know. But for something we do not know, and if you have not local gauge event operator and you through this procedure, you might get something instead. So this is the other potential danger when you have tried to make operator invent generative.
Can you say again why is zeta not the gauge invariant?
Why it's not?
Why do you say zeta is not the gauge invariant?
Which one?
Zeta.
Zeta.
Yeah, you say it's not the gauge invariant.
No.
Why not? So you completely fixed the gauge with co-moving gauge. Completely fixes.
Yes, so why zeta is not, so what are the gauge freedom of zeta? Most people think that this what you describe here completely fixes the jet gauge.
Yes, you fix the gauge. I think what I mean gauge event operator is if I compute the value of this gauge event operator, I will get all the same value in a different gauge.
But zeta
you will not depend on what kind of gauge you choose.
But what is the freedom? What is the gauge freedom that you say zeta has?
Which one?
Zeta.
Zeta.
The camera temperature.
Yeah.
So I think most people think that it's gauge invariant, but you're saying it's not gauge.
It's just because we agree we compute in this stage. And actually, we basically agree with the true result of the data. But if you compute in a different gauge, of course you get different. It's not like the S matrix, the investment size matrix, you can compute in any gauge, no problem. Because actually, you define a specific gauge here. For the gauge event operator, it doesn't matter what kind of gauge you use. So this is why Tanaka and your cover have this kind of debate. The first they are about the non-event thing. The second, they try to use this non-linear extension to get rid of the required energy.
Yes, but that's the difference, but you seem to be talking about field redefinitions, not the gauge.
No, it's here, it's in general relativity. In general relativity, if you make operator invert, this gauge invert operator is not local.
That's
not
only a problem, but that's not a problem perturbatively. Linearized GR, that's perfectly fine. Gauge invariant local operators.
Because you go to IR limit, that's sorry? Is that the IR limit that
doesn't matter what kind of limit. This is the gauge fixing and whether or not it's inverted or not inverted operator. Is that, I mean, here is slightly different topic. I just try to clarify because they try to make operator invert. And I want to point out for GR and the GR, because this is in the GR operator, we can build actually with some component of matching the information as GR. And then we try to do the loop correction to it. But they argue, okay, they want to make operator invert. But here I point out, if you make operator invert in general related, if you just have, for example, EM, there's no problem. But this is for GR. The inverter, gauge inverter operator is not local. Then when you redefine this, you have some problem. This is, you might relate to an entirely different theory or together or without a physical effect. But I want to mention one thing for the phase-based type. Because in the phase-based type, we actually have a well-defined estimations. So if you do the field recognition, and if you do not change the estimations, this kind of field recognition is okay. It's not a problem at all because you do not change physics. But the problem is here. This is written Ross Walker, and we do not have a well-defined estimations. We do not have gauge independent estimations. So this is very hard to say this kind of field recognition is digital or not. Because we do not have something which we can compare with, we do not have for SMHs. Right? So when you do this kind of recognition, we cannot say, okay, this is true or not true. It's okay or not okay, we don't know. It's just that I just want to point out this is some potential danger in conjunction with the phase-based time. Because there are certain categories of field recognition in phase-based time is okay. It's called a virtual case. This kind of case of field recognition will not change SHs. So this is okay. But here we don't know. It just points out some potential danger when you try to make this. Okay. So right now I'm going to talk about the proposal. So the current condition is that we now make the four neutron field equal to background field and to fix the surface of simultaneous and they use the transverse gauge to fix the spatial coordinates. For them, they use the same for fix the surface of simultaneous, but for the spatial part, because they actually wonder this kind of inverter which has come from a constant part of the delta field. So the idea is to make operator invert, spatial invert. And way we call the geometrically fixed the event length to the two observation points. And the one way, there are many ways to geometrically fix the event length. When I say this, I mean this event length will not be changed between the two observation points, even though the geometry to net change. The one way is the Tanaka and the Urakawa proposed. They pick up some initial point, then pick up the direction, then they parallel transport through this geodesic, then solve this functional background image. So this is one, this is through the geodesic, you can just so this is the way they try to make operator especially red. And you can see that the emission here, this is 0 point, this is 0 point, this is the initial point that you pick up. This is this one. Then they try to fix this the distance between there. Even for the geometry to that change, and this is what we call physical, they call physical distance. Okay. And the thing is, original definition is zeta, but it's T0, zeta of T0. And right now they change this spatial coordinates to this functional of matching. And the functional matching they choose is
this one include zeta and g tilde. G tilde is delta ij plus hij, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So this is their way to, I mean, to make a nonlinear extension. Because you can see this nonlinear extension just from this capital X function over g h, this includes the zeta and the h, zeros order and h squared, blah, blah, blah. So this is nonlinear extension. Okay, and I do not express out the equation explicitly. And one loop order in the some special case, they indeed get rid of infinite divergence without infinite cutoff. So in this part, this proposal is a seed. However, in this proposal also have extra problem. The extra problem is this nonlinear extension. Why is it? It's because it introduced one more unit divergence in this nonlinear extension. This is one zeta, okay? And this part, the second part, is from the nonlinear extension. Just because I just pick up one term for simplicity. Here, just expand out the whole thing because this includes zeta and delta ij, hij, and h squared, blah, blah, blah. So I pick up one term. This is a nonlinear extension part. Okay. You have many different ways to form a propagator. You might form this two, or you can form this way, or you can form this way. Here, I just try to make one. For example, one option, you can form a propagator for this, and you can write that. And why is the print extra unit divergence? You can see from this case, when this tau approaches to zero, it's one unit divergence. When this tau plus approaches to one, it's the other unit divergence. So compared to the ordinary recurrent T unit divergence, they bring the extra unit divergence for this nonlinear extension proposal. Okay, so this is not good. And you also can see this nonlinear extension proposal. This is not local, and then this is also Kapasi operator. The Kapasi operator is the when you compute the same space in the same port, then you would call a Kapasi operator. And then the best thing is we do not have a systematic way to renormalize the local Kapasi operator. So it's very hard to argue anything predict by this nonlinear proposal is trustable or not. If you do not have a systematic way to renormalize it, actually we do renormalize local Kapasi operator. For example, if you compute the wave of a local Kapasi, so all in the same point as Kapasi operator, but it's local y. So we renormalize it and use this. Conformal polytons. So basically, if you renormalize local Kapasi operator, it's just you pick up the some polytons which have the same dimension as this local Kapasi operator. This is the sole dimension, it's 3x, we have this one, it's 2, so this is also. So it's the same dimension. Or you can find the other the same dimension counters. For example, 40 term. It's also the same dimension of this Kapasi operator. So basically, when you renormalize this local Kapasi operator, is you just choose this superposition of this local counters, local counter operators. Then you can renormalize it. This is one example. For the local one, is when you try to extend or generalize this kind of thing to the local one, you basically involve the infinite derivatives. So this is why you do not have a systematic way to renormalize it. And this is one bad feature for this nonlinear proposal. But I did not say this proposal is wrong, I just say, okay, this is something we don't know how to deal with. But at the lowest order, because they only consider the lowest order, the lowest order in a special case, there's no problem. But even at one loop order, if you involve such space time dependency relation, and you probably might have this problem. Now, the second basic is you might have UVIR mixing. What that means is you have an environmental reason mixed with UV divergence. Some term look like this. Some powers. Okay? Actually, this also, you also can, you already can see this kind of term in this local capacity operator. But because we have a systematic way to renormalize it, so after renormalize it, this term is also away. However, for my local capacity operator, there is no guarantee we will not encounter that kind of term. And also, if you encounter that kind of terms, then you do not have a systematic way to renormalize it. Then you might have something like that kind of term. Okay? But you say this is the big thing actually comes from the UV uncontrollable part. It's very hard to argue or say this kind of thing predicted from this nonlinear proposal if you do have that feature. It's just not so untrustable. So this is the other bad feature. And also, the latest curve, the one epsilon enhancement. Just to take one example, if you consider one loop zeta cell correlator only out of a qubit, this vertex interaction. So, I think I gave this example before. Okay. So this is basically is the diagram like. So it's a string propagator, it's a one vertex, one quarter of the vertex, and you write it in terms of classical result, and this will be the result. This is the current definition. No one epsilon enhancement. But if you have this nonlinear extension, you can just look at this case. You have four fields. Then you can form actually wave. Actually, here, this three waves to become a two propagator, but no interaction. No vertex because it's the nerve. Then you will see if you write down it's a classical result, time loops result, this loops result, it's one over. Then you see one epsilon enhancement. I'm not saying this is wrong, it's just seems peculiar. If this proposal is really true, then this means we must, in the future, when the measuring techniques improves, we must measure the loop corrections much sooner than what we expect if the compare with the current definition, because in the current definition we do not have one epsilon enhancement, but in the non-linear extension of proposal they have this one epsilon enhancement. So this is just a point to tell when you try to get rid of infrared averages without a infrared cutoff, actually introduce something that then you must take special care of it. And in order to try to fix this extra UV and this one epsilon pattern, one thing you might do is you can fix this function of matrix not through the geodesic. Because I just mentioned there are many ways to geometrically fix invariant lengths between the two organization codes. One is the geodesic, that is Tanaka and the proposal, your cover proposed. And then the other way is you can use some simple differential operator of Green's function. What I mean, you can solve this, then you solve this coordinate through this condition, and you can solve this. Spatial coordinates as a function of the GTO. Okay. And why this is better than why this actually improve UV divergence? Well, because if you have this, actually the specific the expression I do not write down here, but actually they involve the matrix GTO down, so include H. Also some Green's function. And remember, Green's function actually is the three-dimensional integral. So here you have a three-dimensional integral against the propagator in contrast with
previous proposal, because they're geodesic, and so it's one dimensional integral against this propagator. And this one, if you have a more dimensional integral, then this means your unit divergence become less. And then this is why it might be a better fix for this one. If you just solve the differential, use the sum differential operator of Hilbert function and solve the discretized sequence of H and the Hilbert function, then you might have a better unit divergence compared with the previous one. And also, here we only involve G tilde. Remember, G tilde. On this part, it doesn't include zeta. So this is why we might get rid of one, this is a peculiar one episode enhancement in the loop version here. So this is the thing that we look at. And also, in this proposal, this is the way we try to fix, but we didn't fix all the things, still many problems that. But only for the UV, the beta UV behavior, and for the this one epsilon enhancement, in a way, one epsilon enhancement in a loop correction, this might be the proposal to deal with. We already check out in this proposal. They do the same way to get rid of the right divergence and one loop order as the Tanaka Kawas proposal. So here, just to compare the current dimension and the nonlinear extension. So the current dimension is we choose the some special gauge. We fix the surface of a simultaneous by using making a four equal W equal to the ground one. And then we choose the transverse gauge. We fix the special coordinates, so this depends on the gauge. And of course, we also can compute the loop correction using this dimension. But it's just the loop correction depends on the infrared cutoff, such as the initial coordinates, radius of universe, or some wavelengths of horizontals, or something like that. Then people will argue, okay, if I take this cutoff higher and higher, then loop correction becomes big. But this is a little bit dubious. And the new extension of the proposal of the Zeta corridor. Of course, the proposal by Tanaka Yokawa, they actually make operators spatially invariant. So when they do that, they succeed to get rid of infrared divergence without infrared cutoff as one order. But it also brings out the many, many potential things we need to take special care. For example, like extra unit divergence, for example, the peculiar of one epsilon enhancement from the loop corrections. Also, the local field limitation sometimes will just change the physics. Okay. So, finally, I just try to summarize what I talked about today. Okay. So, right origins from the field configuration goes to constant, so it's less than pi, and might be pure gauge, and the secure growth. One part of secure growth might be gauge independent, for example, in the leading part, because the coefficient for leading variable is already the same, exactly the same, in the three different gauges. This is just congestion. We do not have to prove to the most general thing. And also, okay, if we just make our invariant is not enough, because we do a further check. Make it for something to follow a really measure. And if you encounter something which is not a gauge dependent, which is gauge dependent, okay? Such as zeta zeta operator, it's a gauge dependent object, it's quantity, but we would not say this doesn't contain any physical information. It might be played the same way, like the gauge-dependent Green's function, and this each way we might have some way in the future to extract the physical part to form something like a phase-space type S matrix. Okay, so we have made some proposal to the Tanaka and the Yukawa one, and then
we reduce the loss of this unit divergence and one epsilon, particular one epsilon enhancement in the loop directions. So actually, nowadays there are some change in cosmology because we only find out the QFT in the faceless tags is not the one-to-one correspondence. There's no one-to-one correspondence to the QFT in the non-trivial background such as Friedrich Models and Walker. So the last decades, when the people formed the faceless tag, I mean developed the faceless tag QFT, actually they deal with the infrared problems. And they try to make a theory real life ball. They also form estimations. But here we encounter the same thing because we do not have a well-defined estimations in the Friedrich Models of water geometry. So we also need to find something which is infrared finiteness, and we need to know how to renormalize it, and we need to find some observable. Which roughly corresponds to how we really measure. So I think that this is the whole story. Thanks for your attention.